Today, I speak with two moms who created a business while they both had one-year-old babies they were taking care of, and they have grown to selling over 3 million units. They give great advice for any moms that want to launch a business, or really for anyone that wants to grow their business while in the middle of a busy schedule. I took a lot of notes during this interview, and I'm sure you will as well.
Are you looking for new ways to make your sales grow? You've tried other podcasts, but they don't seem to know. Harvest the growth potential of your product or service as we share stories and strategies that'll make your competitors nervous. Now, here's the host of the Harvest Growth Podcast, John LeClaire.
Welcome back to the show. Today, I'm really excited to have on with us Amy Livingstone and Julie Wilson. They are the co-founders of Cheeky Chompers. Now, this is a baby product. I'm going to let them describe it. They have a whole line of products now that are really fantastic, but a great story behind it as well. So they've been running this business for years, had great success, learned a lot of things along the way. I encourage you to listen to this interview. But first of all, Amy and Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So tell us, for the sake of our audience, if they're not familiar with the Cheeky Chompers, what are these products or this line of products, and how'd you come up with the original idea?
So we design and manufacture innovative baby products, each of them with an intuitive twist, each of them with an intuitive twist that help make parents' lives easier. So it's all about looking at being a parent, how difficult it is to be a parent, how amazing it is, but also how tiring it is. And we've got a lot of products that are multi-use or that are attachable, that have a little intuitive twist as moms to help other moms and dads to really make their lives easier as parents.
So what was the first product you launched? Sorry, I cut you off a second, but if you could talk about your first product you launched and how you came up with that original idea as well, what describe it for us?
Yeah, so that was really our kind of light bulb moment that really made the whole thing happen. So just to kind of rewind slightly, Julie and I met on that parenting journey. So we met at our antenatal class. That's like really the class in your local doctor surgery where you're going to learn what you're going to do when this baby comes along and how you have to look after it. There was a group of us and we stayed in touch. So after we'd had our babies, we would meet every week and share stories and get support from each other. And at that point, they went through all the same things at the same time. So when they started to approach that teething stage and they were chewing on absolutely everything and they were dribbling profusely, and we just kept saying, God, I wish somebody would invent a teether that stayed attached to the baby. And then we kind of, Julie and I, there was a lovely group of people, but we were people who'd always sort of had different business ideas along the way. We were both working for other people at that stage, we were on maternity leave, but we said, God, I wonder if we could actually do something about that. I wish we could invent a product, like, ha-ha. And then it kind of made us really, we decided to get together, bottle of wine and a drawing pad to say, right, how could we create something that would invent a product that stays attached to the baby that allows them to chew? And we came up with the Necker Chew. So this was it's like a world's first chewable dribble bib. So basically the babies are dribbling all the time. So you want a really absorbent bib to catch all of that dribble and prevent the teething rash. But then we wanted something that they could chew on, which then we created this silicone, a food grade silicone triangle at the bottom of the bandana style bib. So they could chew on that when they wanted, but when they dropped it, rather than it getting lost or dropped dirty on the floor, it just falls down and stays attached to the bib. So it puts the baby back in control of when they're chewing, rather than having to constantly pick up or lose teethers all over the place. That was our first product idea. Yeah.
And it was an interesting process, you know, as an entrepreneur, speaking to others who are entrepreneurs out there, because we wanted it to be right from the start, not just a one product. We wanted it to be the best in its class. And we wanted it to be a brand that we wanted to develop things that were the best it could be. So even with the Necker Chew, right from the start, things like, we didn't know, we'd never been in retail before, but we wanted to get the best fabric. We wanted to make it really absorbent, because as moms, we could see that if the drool went right through to their chest, it wasn't good. We wanted to have a special middle layer that captured that drool. We wanted it to be reversible, because all of us as parents know that when you go out and they drop something on the bib, you can turn it around the other way and it goes, and you've got a nice clean bib. So we also wanted it to grow with the baby. So there was little things. You think a bib's a really simple thing, but actually, if you think through what would help, then you can create something that's a little bit best in class.
And you've had great success along the way. We'll talk a little bit more about that later in our discussion. But I want to talk about these early stages. I want to ask the question of when did you know you're really onto something? Because, you know, as moms and, you know, as a dad, you and I talked before the show started. I've got four kids. They're past this stage by a few years, but I've been through it. Man, I wish I had this product when our kids were younger. But how did you know that it wasn't just something the two of you liked, but it was really something that, you know, you're going to invest a lot of time, energy, money into building this business? What was the first, I guess, smidgen or indication of success?
It's a really good question. And actually, we're often asked, what advice would you give to other entrepreneurs? And that is exactly the bit. You've got to know that it's not just you that thinks you've got a great idea. You've got to test the market and know that other people out there are going to buy it. But you're also really protective of your idea because you don't want to share it to everybody and then someone copies it. So everyone can be quite protective too. But no, we had developed the product past prototype stage to actually have our first run of production. And along the way, we've been checking with other parents and our baby group and further afield. But then I think the biggest sign for us was we went to a baby show. So they've got like these kind of big consumer exhibitions where as a parent you can go and look at prams and, you know, travel systems and all of those kinds of things. And we went there with our product and the feedback we got from people was just incredible. And at that point we absolutely knew that we were onto something. That went straight from the consumer show pretty back to back. We went to a trade show where there was retailers there and the big names in retail who we'd really earmarked as who we'd want to be with because they were the sort of premium retailers in the UK. They saw the product and they wanted it straight away because they could see it was something new and innovative. So they could see it made sense. And honestly, we always say if we had a pound for everybody who said, God, I wish I'd invented that, that's so obvious, we would be richer than we actually are now. So I think that's often the case, isn't it? Something that's quite a simple and obvious idea that's just not been done before, but that ticks boxes both for retailers, if that's the channel you're choosing to sell through, but also to your consumer audience. So that's really when
And it was interesting, some of the big retailers like in the UK, John Lewis, Marks and Spencer's, you know, Mamas and Papas, these are big brand retailers here, and all of them took us on as a one product brand, very unusual because it was such a novel idea, and we're still with them all. So it's been a really good journey as we've now increased to 18 products. We have lots of SKUs with all of these retailers as a good channel. But it was interesting and quite nerve-wracking when you're standing at your first exhibition and parents come up, especially grandparents. They thought, oh, that's a fantastic idea. And we sold a lot. Great feedback.
And I love how you mentioned how hard it is to sell a single product. So for the benefit of our audience, oftentimes retailers, they're hesitant to deal with new companies that have just one product because if they sell a lot of those, what's next, right? So it's not easy, but when you've got a great product that kind of ticks that box of being obvious, right? Or like once you get it, as soon as you see it, like, why didn't I think of that? Because it's, you know, you're speaking to a need that parents have and in a very, call it an obvious way. I mean, it's a great design. I don't mean to undercut the design you guys have done on this, but it's what you're solving a need that everybody has, right? That's where the obvious nature comes in. And those are the products that can be extremely successful and get past that hurdle too of you're going to face a lot of hurdles with retailers, especially, but also direct to consumer, getting them to actually purchase, getting them to buy, especially with a single product. But when you've got something that's really needed, it makes a big difference. Getting that story, that positioning behind it to really answer those questions. I want to talk briefly about how you mentioned consumer shows and trade shows as well. So I like that you had those, you mentioned back to back, right? The consumer shows, meaning selling direct to consumer, getting that feedback. They're not going to hold back, right? You're going to find out if your product has no merit when you're talking directly to consumers to either make changes or to the product or maybe how you talk about it, et cetera. I think that's a great way that maybe you stumbled into at the time, but start with consumers and then go to the retailers, get all those questions answered in a low risk environment. You lose one consumer, not a big deal. You lose one major retailer in a conversation. That's a bigger potential problem, right? To try to correct, et cetera. So I love that you did those together and really in that order, learn from consumers, take those learnings or those stories now into the trade, right? To the retailers right after that as well. Did you guys find that helpful also?
Yeah, very, very helpful because, yeah, again, as you said, you're speaking to different parents who come from different backgrounds, different areas, looking for different things, and you get good feedback. And one of the biggest elements of feedback was our range. So at that stage, it's our first product. You know, we only had four designs, I think, but we got lots and lots of feedback on colors, and you could see even the trends at the show of other products that were out there and things. So it was a really useful collecting research exercise as well as feedback exercise, I think. And then when you get to the trade show, then it's just really interesting to kind of understand you know, what the retailers are looking for. Some of the things, I mean, we've never been in retail before, so we learn a lot even at the trade show. Things like a pallet, the size of a pallet, or you know, how to export. There was things we just didn't know, but by speaking to them, you know, you kind of pick up a lot of the needs face to face, rather than it's quite difficult to get to face a buyer. You know, whereas at a trade show, you can sit and talk to them and get some insights.
And things like packaging, which is such a massive part of the product because it's the first thing people are going to see when you're not there. We're the most passionate people about our products, but that product's got to stand out on shelf when we're not there to add our sales spiel. You know, it's got to then jump out to the consumer. It's got to hang well. It's got to not rip. It's got to be durable. So all of those things were lessons that we actually really learned through the trade show. And actually, the first time when we did put all of our products on a wall, because I suppose we'd had them in our hands and we'd had them at home, but to put them on a wall, we realized that the way that they were hanging on the cards, they kind of looked like a giant pair of underwear. So we were like, right, we're gonna have to hang this differently. It needs to look a little bit more elegant. So, you know, things like that are important that you get that chance to refine and perfect before you go live in stores.
And again, at the trade show, it's good to get that because the packaging, you know, the buyers really want it not to be too long, too large. You know, just learn over the piece. You want more pieces up. You don't want large packaging and small products. You know, so details like that make a big difference in terms of turnover and sell-through.
And I do want to encourage our audience to think about these shows, even if you're direct to consumer. So even if your goal is not to make it onto retail store shelves, especially the consumer shows, having that, as you mentioned, face-to-face interaction to learn about colors or styles or questions that are going to come up. They just don't come up in the same way when you're dealing with website and Amazon sales. You'll get some emails here and there, but those face-to-face interactions are truly invaluable, even again, even if that's not your end goal. But getting those learnings to drive your D2C business for sure. I want to talk about too being mom inventors. So we have a lot of our audience are moms that have great ideas and want to invent something and want to know how to get started. You guys did this right in the thick of it with babies in tow, which the hardest time, I think, certainly from a calendar schedule or calendar timing, is during those early stages when you've got young kids at home. So how did you do it? Or I guess maybe you have any advice for moms that are out there that have other great ideas that they want to bring out.
Gosh, I think, you know, it's I suppose looking back, sometimes you know, we
Think
talk about
how.
this all the time. We do think, gosh, how did we do that? Because we both had 1-year-olds at that stage. We were also still working in our other jobs, which was like 3 and 4 days a week that we worked. And we were then trying to launch this business in the evenings. I was then quite quickly pregnant with baby number two. I was too scared to tell Julie. It was a lot of juggling, but actually, like anything, you just, when you really want something and you can really see the opportunity, you just make it happen. And I think with most things in life, it's the same. Trying to look too far ahead can be exceptionally daunting, but we just kept doing, let's just do the next step. So let's just take it to the next bit and see how we go. And yes, I mean, I was in labor with baby number two, and I was on the phone to Julie saying, I'm in labor, I'm going to hospital in about half an hour. I've done the invoices up to this line 72. You need to take over the invoicing from there. So there's not, you know, there's no break when it's your own business. And through the last 10 years, there's not really been any summer holidays. Anything that we've done, we've always been in touch because there's no off switch when it's your own. But we've pretty much been at every sports day at school. We've been at every parents' night. You know, we've been able to juggle those things and be able to be there at things for the kids. So it has its positives and its negatives, but you just make it work like you do with anything else that's thrown at you. I think parents are much more adaptable than non-parents, maybe because we're used to juggling no matter what. So
And it's hard. It is hard when you've got that juggle, but it's also very rewarding, and it is like your other child. And we feel like that, you know, we've invested in this the way we invest in our child. We love it the way we love our children in some ways. And we just kind of try to fit it all in. But one of the other things I think is important for the listeners as well is more that when you start a business, I think there's also a sort of a bit of a negative about a mom's business in some ways. Like you feel like you're in the back bedroom packing things up and it's a small deal and things. We never wanted it to be like that. We're often, and we were in the back bedroom packing up the orders when we started before we came into our office. I think it's really important that, you know, we did right from the start that we want to build this brand as a brand. We want it to be good quality. We want it to be premium. We want it to wash well and last, you know, a long time. And that was important too. So we could have done it probably quicker and easier in some ways with the children, but we didn't. We kept sort of saying, no, let's get a PR company, even though we can't afford it. Let's make sure we're positioning ourselves. Let's go to the retailers that are at the right position that we want to be attached to and sit in synergy with. And I think that was really important, the influencers that we feel represent the brand, you know, even though at that point, probably one or two products in, but we were kind of almost punching above our weight early on, even though we were a small concern.
So it's hard to not look cottage industry, even though you're, sometimes that is the reality. So I suppose maybe not to be stereotyped as that mompreneur. Mm-hmm.
I love it. A lot of that was so insightful. Thank you. A couple of things that jumped out to me. One is, you know, think of yourself as big, or think of your business as what you want it to become. Because every business starts out small, shipping things from your garage or your bedroom or wherever it might be. But it's about where you're going, right? Having that journey and that vision of where you want to, you know, no one wants to end up there, right? So think about and prepare for the ending stage, right? Or the growth stage of your business. That's great insight. Another thing, I never thought of this before, but I think in my mind, maybe one of the reasons that mom inventors, mom business owners are so good at what they do is, you know, despite already doing the hardest job, right, of being a mom, it keeps you so busy, is I liked how, I'll probably say it in different words, but you talked about how you're already doing so much. It's almost like, okay, well, the business is just one more thing to add to the list, right? So moms are already busy doing a lot of different things. Multitasking is a true gift, really, that moms have, right? It's kind of in your nature. And it's like, well, I can fit one more huge thing and really fit my life around it as well. And like you said, you know, treat it as one of your, another child, in essence. And so it's empowering, I think, to hear it that way. I really like that. So thank you. So let's fast forward a little bit. So now you're in 1,500 retailers across 30 different countries. You've sold over 3 million of your products so far. I want to talk about that where you're at now, what some successes that have gotten you there. But the first question I'll ask is the foreign country thing. So this, we get a lot of questions like, hey, I'm doing great in the US, and a lot of our listeners are US based. You guys are obviously UK, wherever you're at. How do I take it to other countries? And the fact that you guys are in 30 countries, that's phenomenal. So how do you do that? How do you sell effectively outside the borders of your own country?
So suppose I mentioned PR there. One of our biggest PR exercises was going on the UK Shark Tank, which is called Dragon's Den. Then right from the start, that plus there was another interview with the Mail Online, which it goes syndicated across the world. They were both good international coverage in terms of PR, and that helped. And we can talk about Shark Tank. That was an interesting exercise. But the other thing, I guess, is that we just went from the next stage of consumer show to UK trade show to international trade show. And that was the third element of kind of exporting, was just to go and try it out. So we had a small stand in the British Pavilion. So it's part of the pavilion of the country. And then we just tried and tested, met distributors and things. So between the kind of exposure of Dragon's Den or Shark Tank internationally, we got inquiries. We met a lot of them at our trade show in Germany. It was for the big European show first. And then we then started to get some distributors, and we just learned as we went. Some of the time we didn't even know the geography or the currency or the how we would ship it, but we got these relationships and we worked it out. And we got it wrong sometimes, but you know, we learned over a period of time, built really good relationships with these distributors.
And I would say I wouldn't necessarily. That was our journey, and that's because we had a product that we knew was going to get copied, and it did, and we tried to protect it with all the IP that we could with a limited budget. But at the same time, to go far and wide as a, in a, as a strategy when you've got something that is going to be copied. It's kind of first to market advantage. So we actually made it, it was important for us to try and get something into multiple countries. So we were there first. But if we were to do that again and we were doing something that wasn't necessarily going to be copied, that wouldn't necessarily be the strategy that we would choose. We would possibly do one market and saturate it and do it really well, rather than be in multiple markets where you're doing lots of little bits and lots of, you know, little bits in lots of places. So it just really depends on the strategy. Going international is not always the best next move. You know, I think it just, so it has to be dependent on your product and your business and on the resource that you've got, because it spreads you very thinly to try and do really well and go sort of deeper into those multiple, you know, regions and countries. So
one of the key things I think about export for others is partnerships. And I do think it's really difficult, but it's not always biggest is best. It's just one of the tips that we've learned along the way. I mean, a lot of the big distributors who say they can sell your product all around the world or in a specific region are not necessarily going to give you the attention you need if they represent so many other brands. So sometimes our biggest resort, our biggest revenue anyway, comes from quite small distributors who only have five or six other brands. And so they've got more time and effort in representing our brand.
That's great advice. Let's talk now within the UK border. So you guys earned an award called the Queen's Award for Enterprise. Now, many of our, again, our listeners that might be US-based may not know this award specifically, but it's very prestigious in the UK. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience? How did you earn it? You know, what was it like getting the award? And then how has it helped your business?
That was an amazing award. And it recognized our export activity. And it was... I think for the size and scale of us and the speed we exported, and we won it for export. But it was amazing, an amazing award because it's so prestigious, and it's you get opportunity for lots of PR as a result of it and things. But our best part of it was that we met the king, who's now king. He was Prince Charles at the time, but we went to Buckingham Palace, which we'd never been inside. And we met lots of other people who were won the Queen's Award for different elements. And it's so inspirational. You just see these businesses, you know, and there weren't many female businesses there. We could only see four or five out of maybe the 80 winners. So we felt really proud, you know, to get to that point with quite a small business at the time, and to meet the king. And as a result, we've been able to use that photograph of us shaking hands with the king, now king, everywhere internationally, and it's just been a really good stamp of credibility and approval, you know. So
and actually it's appreciated by other markets that we export to, because and actually we had a big celebration with our distributors in each of those countries to make them part of that award and celebration, because we won it because of the exports. But you know, a lot of people love the UK royal family, and so it kind of had quite a lot of kudos, I suppose. But awards in general have been something that we've really focused on, because it's really important to have both consumer and sort of product awards, so like your products winning an award, but also for you as business people to win business awards, because it just adds to your credibility. It shows that you as a person, as much as your products, are award worthy, and is great for PR and marketing purposes. So we definitely recommend. There's lots of awards and different countries, so it's always a good thing to put yourself up for.
And when you earn them, especially great awards like this, that's not just sitting with your award, but as you've mentioned, using that award, right? So making sure you get PR about it, and you know, use it and involve. I love that you involved your distributors, your partners in that too. It makes them feel a part of it, right? So it's almost giving them a piece of the award along the way. So that positivity that surrounds. So that's good advice too. Are there any resources that you guys recommend? Things that have been helpful for your business along the way?
I think our most helpful resource has actually been groups. Is we have local kind of business groups that we're part of that are consumer businesses. We've got national and kind of female driven businesses that we're part of. And honestly, just that, taking the time out of the business to look back in it and to learn from what other people's mistakes and successes are, but also just sounding board. You know, we're lucky there's two of us running the business, but many businesses, they only have one. You might have only have one. So it's important that you do speak to other people, because you get so caught up and so passionate about your own that actually somebody else could come up with an idea or solution that you just haven't thought of yet. So that's been a real resource for us as other people in business flying the flag for entrepreneurs.
And it is about taking time out of the business, right? You mentioned that at the beginning. It is a decision, and it's so hard for business owners. They're all busy, right? So we all have so many things pulling at us in every direction. You know, like a mom, right? You've got to make choices what you can and can't do. You can't do everything, but it can be, when you find the right group, I agree, invaluable, right? So it is a conscious choice. Like, no, it's not like we all have, hey, I've got extra 5 hours a day, so what do I use that for? It's like, okay, I've got to fit this in somehow, but it is worth it to find that right group, great resources, great camaraderie, great learnings from other people on the way. Well, is there anything I didn't ask you that you think could be helpful for our audience?
Oh, I had one thing was I think it's more a personal thing for each of us. I think you can get caught up, especially if you're a parent. You've got your children that are dependent on you. As you build the business and the team are dependent on you. And I think what's really, really important, and we don't do it often enough, I think, is to look after ourselves, because it takes a lot out of you, and you can get a lot back if you give yourself the time. And I know that's probably not business related, but it does help, I think, if you could just give yourself some time and some kudos sometimes.
You must listen to that advice.
Well said. I do want to thank you for your time today, and I encourage our audience to check out this line of products at cheekychompers.com. Cheeky is spelled C-H-E-E-K-Y, chompers.com. And they've been nice enough, Amy and Julie, to give a promo code for our audience to get a 10% discount off any purchase. So if you use promo code, this is all in the show notes as well. But if you use promo code Harvest Growth with a capital H, capital G, Harvest Growth, the number 10, Harvest Growth 10, as a promo code, you get a 10% discount off your purchase on their website. Well, Amy and Julie, I really appreciate your time today. This is such a fun interview. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Also, be sure to check out harvestgrowth.com to see other episodes we've recorded. And if you'd like to take a shortcut and learn the process that we've used to profitably launch and grow hundreds of products since 2007, download our Secret Sauce Product Marketing Campaign Cheat Sheet at harvestgrowthsecretsauce.com. Or you can set up an appointment right from our website to speak directly with a member of the Harvest Growth team in a free one-on-one consultation.